A good saying is that the best camera that a person can have is the one in their hand or in their pocket.
Join us as we chat to amazing cat explorers and experts. Dive into the tips and tricks that you can use while exploring with your cat. They share the war stories, we celebrate the wins, laugh at the horror experiences, and the funny moments that have been a part of their journey. Hi everyone, welcome to the Cat Explorer podcast. I'm Hasara. And before we jump into today's exciting chat, we would love it if you could screenshot this podcast on your phone, post it on your Instagram stories, and tag us at catexplorer.community and our awesome guest, Furry Munchkins Photography, to let us know that you're listening along. We'll reshare it in our stories, and we're really excited to hear your main takeaways and what you think of today's episode. So if you're like me, you probably take endless photos of your cat, either for your Instagram feed or to capture those precious memories. I've spoken to many of you and you've mentioned that you would love to learn a bit more about photography and how to improve the photos you take of your kitty. And because of this, I'm so excited for our guest today. Keith is the force behind Furry Munchkins Pet Photography, a pet photography company based in Sydney, Australia. You might have noticed the amazing photos he took at the first Cat Explorer picnic. Personally, I love his photos due to their clarity and how he manages to capture the personality of the kitty, doggy, or even horse that he's photographed. And on top of that, Keith is a part of the Cat Explorer community, and he has a cat who's training to explore as well. So I'm so excited to jump into our chat today all about photography and cat exploring. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. It's really exciting.
Thanks for joining us. So to start, we'd love to hear a little bit about Furry Munchkins Pet Photography. How did it get started?
Yeah, so it kind of just happened. I started about 2 years ago when I first picked up a camera. So I got that given to me from a friend, and I was just recovering from surgery, so I had a lot of time on my hands. But I really began just taking photos of landscapes back then. It only took a couple of months after when my wife Charlotte and I, we adopted two cats of our own, and like every new owner, we just started taking a lot of photos of them. So I really, took a lot of pictures and just really went into doing that more and more and just started taking photos of other people's pets in order to. And it kind of just began from there. Felt that it was something that I really enjoyed doing, just the whole process of it all and just being able to look back at the pictures. And I think I made a lot of people happy, I would like to say as well. So just from doing that. So I think it made me think that I could be doing more with that. So yeah, that's how it began.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. I love how you say that it made people happy. I think pet photography and seeing like the photographs that you take, it just makes you happy. It makes you realize what that cat or that dog is doing, and they just always look so happy. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
And like, I love that you're a cat owner as well. So tell us a little bit about your cats.
Yeah, sure. So we like to say that we only have 2.5 cats, but now we have, well, our half cat became a third cat. So we have three cats, Chai, Thyme, who are both a brother and sister pair. So we got them right at the beginning about a year ago. And yeah, they were adopted from the RSPCA and they were supposed to be just fosters. Like we were fostering them for some time, but we quickly fell in love with them and it was really hard to let them go after that. So we decided to adopt them. So Thyme is a gray tabby and she's coming to about 2 years old now. She's extremely vocal and she just loves her food. So she'll always let you know that she wants to eat food. And we call her like the voice of all the other cats. So she makes it known like what everyone's opinions are. Chai, he's the male cat. He's a bit more shy. But he is extremely, like, he loves pets. So when the other two cats are gone, you find him like chirping and just wanting pets. So he's really cute. Our last one's Evan. He's the youngest. He's about 7 to 8 months now, I think. Yeah. And he's a ginger tabby. And we're only supposed to have him for one day. But he became like a foster fail as well. He was an orphan kitten, so it came to us really young and we just fell in love with him as well. We did try to adopt him out though, but no one replied, but I think in hindsight we're really happy that that's the case. But yeah, he's just very spoilt, and he tries to pick on the other two a lot as well. Yeah, so cool.
So he's the smallest and he's picking on the bigger ones.
Yeah, well, he's actually, we thought he's going to be a really small cat, and we're hoping for that 2.5 cat. and, you know, he became really quite big, and he's almost catching up. And I think he's like quite big now, and I think he's going to be actually bigger than the other two. So, yeah, and he's definitely like, I mean, even when he was a little young, small kitten, like he would pick on the others like he was trying to throw his weight on them and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think he doesn't know what he's in for, basically.
Oh, I love that. And he's also learning how to be a cat explorer as well.
Yes, it's very exciting. I think we wanted to start at a very young age, just with regards to the other two. Like, I think they're getting older and they're quite scared about being outdoors. So I think we decided, like, when Evan came in, that we wanted to do a lot more of that training and stuff like that too. So yeah, it's been exciting. We've been taking him to parks nearby, and, you know, just with the harnesses and like wearing harness and everything like that, and he's been pretty good. It did take a bit of time though, so yeah.
And have you had any challenges? So you just mentioned that it took some time to get him used to the harness. Has that been challenging, or are you getting there?
Yeah, I think just with the harness, like, I think a lot of cats that we've experienced, like, would just be like turning around in their harness right from the beginning and not happy with it. But Evan quickly got over that whole aspect. I think it's just being outdoors. I'd like to say it's a lot of training for us as well. Just basically when we're outside, we're worried about what people think, because it's just like, you know, you go outside and you see these people who almost have never seen a cat in their life, and they just stare from the distance. I don't know if you guys have experienced mm-hmm. that a lot as well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and so I think it's a lot of the anxiety of like, oh no, people are looking at us because we're weird walking a cat and stuff like that. So that was training on our side to be like, yeah, it's okay, and cats need to be outdoors as well in a safe space. I think with regards to Evan, like, it's just being able to walk well, just like in a, you know, in the path and all that as well, but just recognizing that he's a cat and he does what he wants. So mm-hmm. yeah, just getting used to that. And I think just we've been bringing him to the same park for some time as well, so I think it's just him getting used to that whole environment and being around places like that. Challenges come when there's like people and dogs in the area, so we just try to stick to an area that's not like well populated in that sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's so interesting that you mention it's a bit of training for yourself as well, because yeah, we all get stared at. We all get the weird comments of, you're walking a cat? Is that a cat?
Yeah.
And I think because we're doing something different, that's not as commonplace at the moment. So yeah. I think everyone needs to get over that fear, because we get that all the time, and that's something that Daniel and I have worked really hard on. I think now we're trying to embrace it.
Yeah.
And we have a giggle with everyone, because I think because I've had a lot of people try and take sneaky photos, and I'll see them do it and I'll just position myself. I'll be like, here you go, you can take a photo of our cat.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. And I think it's more that educational piece. But yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned training ourselves. Because so much of it is training us as well as training our cat as well. Like, and then there's also like training ourselves to understand our cat, like the whole part about they're not a dog, they don't walk in a straight line, they don't walk on the path, like they're going to go eat that patch of grass over there or sniff that bush, or, and I think dogs do that too, but I think with cats we feel it a lot more. But it's learning those things.
Yeah, it does take a bit of time on our part, but you know, it's all comes with the whole adventure of it all. Yeah,
definitely. I think also, like, we see all these cats who are, like, able to climb mountains, and you're like, why can't my cat do that? And then you realize those cats have been doing that for years, and it's taken them training and conditioning to get up there. So one day, baby steps.
Yeah, got to start young, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. So jumping a little bit back to, like, photography and photographing animals, what's your favorite thing about photographing animals?
Yeah, it took a lot of time to think about this, actually. And I think that I find myself thinking about the whole, like, process of it So from the start of just actually taking the photos, like that does bring me quite a bit of joy with regards to doing that. I think it gets harder when animals don't cooperate or, I guess, act in the way that I would like them to, which happens like more than 99% of the time sort of thing. So I think the greatest joy is coming up to, I guess, the whole outcome of it. Also seeing, in a sense, the end product and letting my clients and myself, you know, see the end product. And that's something that I really enjoy because I guess we really think about the story behind how we achieve photos together like that. And there always is a bit of a laugh and giggle and stuff like that with related to that. So yeah, that's something I really enjoy the most.
That's awesome. I love that you mention that the animals don't always cooperate because I actually went out to our community and asked them what their biggest challenge with photographing their cats are. And I think it was like nearly 70% of the answers was, our cats don't stay still to pose for a photo, or they like turn around, or they like show you their butt because they're not interested in the camera. They want to go sniff something. Yeah. Do you have any suggestions on how to, I'm reluctant to say, how do you make your cat pose for something? Because it's very difficult to make a cat do what they don't want to do. But is there a way that you can encourage them to pose where you want them to pose? Or do you have any tips for what to do if your cat doesn't pose?
Yeah.
For a photograph, I mean, of course.
Well, yeah, this is a really good question from the community. And I think I personally struggled with that a lot, especially with regards to cats. I think just with cats, I want to I think that I would say like having a lot of patience is the most important thing. Because as you guys know, and the difficulty with just getting them to pose, often with cats that are more, I guess, amenable to like doing commands and stuff, that's always good. So just sitting and staying, that's usually quite difficult already. Like my cats can sit, but they won't stay there for too long. I would say finding out what their biggest motivations are. So just in terms of cats, like if it's food, if it's play, that's the main thing. So if it's food, you know, just getting them to, you know, just lifting like the food up just right where your camera or your phone is, or just slightly above that. And being able to take a quick shot. I know you only have like a few seconds to be able to do that. Other things would be like if it's toys or playing and stuff like that, you can usually incorporate that. So a lot of my photos of cats will have like ribbons and stuff like that in there as well, just because that's something that they really love to do. Just with regards to like a lot of cats respond quite well, I think, to like bells and all that. So if you just do that, a quick jingle and stuff like that, you can usually get a quick picture just as they quickly look at it. Cats also respond to any fast movement, so you do need to do that quite quickly and then try and get a shot just quickly of that as well. So yeah.
That's so interesting because we've been training Lumos to stay. So 3 weeks ago he could stay, but we've now lost it in 3 weeks. Like he's now I'll try and make him stay and then he'll just come running to me. And I'm like, no. So what I find with our cats is when we're out and about, they don't necessarily stay. But I really like your idea about using like a jingle, because I think definitely for Noxie, who's very toy motivated, that will make her look at the camera. But what about cats who you can't make them pose? Do you have any tips on how we can take a photograph of them while they're doing what they do? Like, for example, looking at something.
I think that's, again, a really good question. And I think that the majority of my photos that come from taking cats is like, it's really just not planning anything, in fact. So I don't really go out, like just with my cats alone, I don't carry my camera around and be like, okay, this is like 30 minutes that I'm going to set aside to take amazing photos of them. In fact, I just leave the camera close by. And or phone close by, usually it's my phone. And, you know, if they do something silly or if they do something that makes me laugh or something like that, or, you know, that captures their personality, I quickly run and get my camera. So I'm doing that a lot. And often I'll be like asking my wife, Charlotte, like, are they still doing it? Are they still sitting in that position? And she'd be like, oh, no, you missed it. Or like, oh, yeah, they're still doing that. And then I just be able to continue that. And I think it's just that point where they're the most comfortable and, you know, just doing the things that they like that captures their personality, but also is able to take the most natural and, I guess, playful pictures that is what I really like about cat photography in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like I find the ones when I'm out and about with Lumos and Noxie, it's just Lumos just, he'll be fascinated by a bird, or Noxie will be really, like she would want a pet and she'd be really happy. And those are the photos that I find end up coming like out the nicest. And at home, it's always when they're playing. So playing for a ribbon or like a toy, or like when they've had the zoomsies, they just get these like big eyes. And so then I try and keep the camera nearby around because they get the zoomsies at, because I work from home, so they get the zoomsies at 10:30 every morning. I don't know why. And so I try and keep a camera because then they'll do something funny or something like that. So yeah, I completely agree. It's having that camera or your phone nearby and just like grabbing it and taking the photo.
And exactly, and I think you made a good point, Hasara, just about you know, knowing the so-called schedule and stuff like that as well. So you know, if you know that they're gonna do something that you want to capture at about 10:30 every morning, that would be really good to have your camera out then. Oftentimes, like, I tend to know, like, when my cats, well, my cats are taking a nap and stuff, like, those usually make for really, really funny, like, positions. Sometimes they really sleep in a funny way. Other times, like, when they're waking up, that's when you're going to get a lot of pictures of them yawning. So that's usually a good one for kittens or any cat for that matter, that have good teeth. but yeah, so that's one. A lot of pictures that you get of them like licking and cleaning themselves are usually quite good as well. And that's usually after you feed them, usually wet food. That's when they tend to do that quite a bit as well. But yeah, I think it's just about the community knowing their cat, which they definitely do, and just being able to, I guess, just be casual about it and just let them do what they want to do in terms of posing pictures. Yeah, you know, that becomes difficult in some sense, but if you do have to do that, like just using their food, like motivation and stuff like that as well, or play would be one big thing. Yeah
I can hear some playing happening in the background there.
I was just gonna ask whether you can hear that. That's Evan. He's playing with this, with his toy that has like a ball stuck inside like the ring. So every time he hits it, like it's just going to go in a circle and it just comes back. And it's great. We love that because we bought that from just one of the supermarkets and like it's really cheap and he really loves it. The other two cats are just like, this is the most ridiculous thing ever. So it's great.
I think I know what toy you're talking about. Noxie actually ends up wearing it, so she'll try and grab it, and then she'll somehow go in the middle of it, and she'll be walking around with it. I'm like, I don't even understand how this happened.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's awesome. And actually, another question that I found this really interesting, because this has only happened to me a few times, but a lot of people in our community reached out and said that when they get down to take a photo of their cat will come and, like, because they love their human so much, they'll get so excited and they'll come and headbutt the camera. So they'll be run straight through to the camera. And that, like, I think that's beautiful because your cat loves you and they want to show you love. But that's, I understand that's not the best for a photograph. So do you have any recommendations of what to do there?
Yeah, again, a really good question. I think that happens quite a bit. And I would just say that, I mean, I try and unpack, like, what sort of thing is happening because of that. So oftentimes, I think that's because, like, I guess people have different scents and all that. I mean, I'm pretty sure that their cats love them, which is very important. But sometimes, like, I find after a photo shoot, and I've just had all these dogs run around me and stuff like that, I get my shoes are really, like, they have all these dog scents, maybe. So at that point, I find, like, my cats, when I come home, they'll just be rubbing like crazy over the shoes. So maybe that's one thing. So I think that's something important to note. But just using that would be pretty important, like having two people around. So I would say one person taking the photo. And it's funny because that person then, the other person then becomes like the motivator. So instead of food or play, like you kind of use them to do that. So I would say get ready for that person to be moving around. And for the person having the phone, you know, just being able to take those like pretty candid and comfortable shots and all that as well. But apart from that, like one of my cats, a Chai, like he really likes pets on a certain day. So like getting, like, he actually would sit in order for you to pat him. So that, again, that becomes the motivator. So the reward is a pat on the head. So if you could use that to get him to sit and stay just for a couple of seconds for you to take the photograph and then reward him with a pat, that works sometimes too. But yeah, I get that moving towards a person that can be quite difficult, though it would make for good like action-ish shots where they do like a catwalk towards the camera in a sense. Yeah. And I guess we'll cover that a bit more later, I think, just in terms of like camera settings and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I love that you mentioned the candid as well. Like, sometimes the best photos aren't the posed ones. They're the ones where they're doing something completely unexpected and you just happen to capture the moment because you have the camera nearby. I think, interestingly, one of Lumos and Noxy's most popular photos on Instagram is one of Lumos hissing because he'd seen a dog and he just suddenly lost it and he just started hissing. And I just happened to have the camera nearby. I just quickly took a shot. I didn't even look at the composition or anything. And I was really lucky that it worked out well. So that was interesting. And I think what you say about the motivator, that's something I'd never really thought about either, is like understanding what our cats are motivated by. And it could be some form of training where we train them to, they know that when they take a photo, they will get a pat or they will get some food or they'll get some playtime or something like that. So that's a really good point. So we've recently noticed, and this is something that I've recently learned about, but I'm sad to hear that it's been a trend that's been going around for a while where black cats don't get adopted. And while there are historical reasons where for some odd reasons they might be considered bad luck or whatnot, the one of the growing reasons behind this is because they're not considered to be Instagrammable, which I think is really sad because black cats have this like the amazing personality and they're so beautiful. What are your suggestions on how we can photograph black cats?
Yeah, that's a, I mean, that's a very good point. I think that it's very sad. I'm going to sidetrack again just with a story of mine, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so like we do a lot of fostering at the beginning, a lot related to like cats and kittens. So at one point we had like 5 kittens and their mom in our house. This was going back a few months ago. And one of them was a black kitten, which we obviously fell in love with a lot. And basically she was the only female cat and she was the tiniest and she was a black cat. So we were quite worried after the whole thing that, you know, she wouldn't get adopted out the way the others would. So, yeah, we talked to a friend who was working in the RSPCA then as well. And basically, she was actually saying like, oh, you know, like it's funny because I think the black cats go out the fastest at that point of year because what happened was that the Black Panther Marvel movie just aired. So a lot of people, I think, were adopting and, yeah, because of the whole show. But, you know, I think the problem comes with, yeah, that's not going to be something that's going to be repeatable all the time, obviously. So that's a very good point just in terms of photographing like black cats. So I guess in terms of that, a couple of tips would be the first thing would be that lighting is the most important. So if you could have them outdoors, and that's, yeah, not for everyone, but if they are going to be like cat explorers, that would be great. But on a sunny day, if the sun is like low, would be really good. So that's either really early in the morning, what we call golden hours. So just like before or after sunrise, which is not for everyone, or before and after like sunset as well is pretty good. So when the sun's low, basically like if the sun is behind the cat you're shooting, like taking a photo of them, it'll be quite well lit in that sense. Or if the sun is right up in the sky and stuff like that, that looks makes for pretty good pictures as well, because then you see all the fur and stuff like that being quite well lit. Yeah, so the main thing with photographing black cats is making sure that if you do have any artificial lighting, just make sure that it's not coming from the side. If you have any side lighting, that usually makes for, like, it just doesn't, like, you can get shadows or it just doesn't accentuate their features and all that very well. often when it comes to a bit more technical things would be using like a off-camera flash, for example, that could help as well. Just because like if you're taking photos of them with really the dark eyes as well, it just kind of goes, you know, you can imagine that it can be really difficult because you can't really see their eyes. So a flash would make for what we call good like hit lights. So you can see like the white in their eyes just because of the mm-hmm. flash coming about. So that's pretty good too. I guess apart from lighting, a lot of it is just again capturing their personality. So we all know that like black cats can be the most adorable cats ever. So you know, just being able to take photos of that and not, I guess, not worrying too much about too much of the technical things, but being able to do what you guys do in terms of capturing the best parts, or you know, this again, the story behind the photo, I think that's the main important bit. Yeah, just regards to that. Yeah,
I love that you mentioned like capturing their personality. Do you have any recommendations or ideas of how we can set up photographs where we capture their personality, like not just black cats but all our cats' personalities?
Yeah, so I think this is actually a big question that I ask my clients to fill, like when I ask them to fill out a questionnaire before my photo shoots, I get them to describe what their personality of the cats or dogs are. So again, it's hard because personalities can be quite, like it can be intangible. It is intangible stuff. So that can be quite difficult to see in a picture, but I guess unpacking that a bit further. So for example, like one of the things that a person used to describe her cat's personality was that she's quite sassy. So you know, it's asking her beyond that what that entails. So she's sassy, like when she hisses because she's not getting food, or she's very vocal when she's not getting food, or she comes up to you and tries to, I guess for my cat, just thinking like she tries to jump up on you so that she can like get your attention, or she bites you your ankles and stuff like that. So I think those are things that help to describe a certain personality of that cat. And so if I were to take photos of that, again, no real route to doing that, but just being able to take a photo, maybe example would be of my cat biting my ankle, for example. I know that can be quite difficult, but it's, again, just about being in that moment and capturing those things that help to describe their personalities. It's hard because I don't think it's really like physical appearances, but how are you able to use those pictures taking out the physical appearances or what they're doing to be able to explain their personality. And I guess a lot of it in terms of Instagram or social media is the story behind it. So you guys do that very well in terms of explaining, you know, what's going on in this picture. And you know, it's a lot about the emotions behind it. And explaining all that people understand what the photo is, basically. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It's that storytelling aspect of it, like, my cat's on this tree because they love climbing trees, or we're really proud of them because they were able to get up on this tree because they haven't been able to do that before, or cross a stream. Like, so many cats now are crossing streams, and there's these amazing photos of them in the middle of a stream on a rock, which, like, I'm scared to cross the street, so I'm amazed that all these cats are able to do it. And there's a photo of them. So, like, that kind of stuff where they're not even paying attention to the camera. They're just, like, candidly smelling a log or something like that. So
Those
are absolutely beautiful. And talking about, like, taking photographs and things like that, what's your favorite tech to photograph animals?
Okay. Yeah, so I really like having a camera. Yeah, like in terms of having a DSLR camera or mirrorless. So my favorite is I have a mirrorless camera, and that just means it's a bit lighter than having a DSLR. I'm not going to go into technical things in terms of that, but carrying around or lugging around a really heavy camera can be really difficult when taking photos of animals outdoors. So that's something I really like, and having good lighting. So I guess just a plug, like I got some of my lighting equipment from eBay that's just about $100, and you can come with like a really nice backdrop and everything too, and just two simple like softbox lights. can go a long way just in terms of taking pictures of your cats indoors, because lighting is so important. Other than that, favorite tech would be, like the lenses that I use. So I have a longer telephoto lens, so just able to, for me to stand quite far away and just basically let my animals do what they want and just stand far away taking photos of them. So that's where I take a lot of those candid natural shots, because they kind of forget that I'm there, which is really what I want. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So yeah, like a teleporter? That sounds like something from a magical world. So those lenses, they're the longer ones, that so you can stand away from far away and still be able to get the shot. So they're pretty awesome as well. And you're right, like carrying I carry a DSLR and it's really heavy. I tend to get neck pain because I've been carrying it around all day. So these new mirrorless cameras that they're bringing out are quite amazing. And by mirrorless, they don't have a mechanism inside the camera that a DSLR would have, but they still take amazing photos.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And but one thing that I found really interesting speaking to a few people is that buying new tech doesn't always mean that you're going to get better photos. It's how you use your tech, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that this is an important point, and I think just something that I learned for myself really early on as well. So I tend to think that people always tell me that, you know, tech isn't gonna make you better, but you need to get better just in terms of learning skills of taking photos initially. And that really just comes with a lot of practice and a lot of time spent taking pictures of like your cats and all that. I think my own personal experience was that I really quickly wanted to get the best gear and best equipment right from the start, ever since I had that idea of taking photos of pets. But I soon realized that, you know, in terms of the cost of the equipment, it's probably one of the most expensive hobbies possible. And so like everything was adding up in terms of cost. So, you know, it made me, and I had my wife explain this a lot to me, and she was saying like, you know, you just need to do exactly that. And obviously at that point, I just didn't want to hear any of it, because, you know, I just wanted to buy equipment and get better. Funny story, I did, like, you know, took a lot of practice and took a lot of photos, and I felt like I think I got better, which is great. But when I did end up getting more expensive equipment, like the mirrorless camera, just expecting that in terms of focusing and stuff like that, it would be a lot easier. But yeah, it really wasn't actually. Like a lot of the whole, like, what helped me the most was just the skill of, you know, taking focused shots and all that as well. So with the mirrorless, like, there is one particular feature called like eye autofocus. So what it does is it's able to track people's eyes. So I was really happy with that. And I was like, oh, this will be great for taking photos of animals and stuff, only to realize that that feature doesn't track your animal's eyes. So when they're running and stuff like that, you can just still take a lot of blur shots using that feature. So yeah, I guess just an example of how like tech isn't the most important thing.
Yeah, definitely. It's the time that you spend practicing and things like that. And I have to admit, like, certain members of our community, I've been following them for a while, and you can tell that they've been practicing and their photography is getting better and their shots are getting clearer, and they're capturing their pets, their cat's personality a lot better now. And it's really nice to see that there's that evolving as well. But like, you're right. It's, sometimes we think new tech means that our photos are going to be sharper and stuff like that, but it's not necessarily the case. I'm talking about sharper photos. Like, if you're using a DSLR, do you have any suggestions on how to capture photos that aren't blurry?
Yeah. So it all comes down to like the whole, I guess with the DSLR, having the whole like aperture, ISO and shutter speed, so that I guess it forms like this thing called the exposure triangle. If you just want to search that on Google and all that, that's really good explanation. There's some really good, very clear videos on YouTube as well that explain that a lot better than I can. So I guess just a quick run through of the settings that I like to use, like just with the aperture, just making sure that it's the lowest, so the smallest number in a sense. So what that means is that a lot of light is coming in, so you can take basically photos that have very shallow depth of field. And what that means is that everything else gets blurred out except your subject, which is your cat. And that really makes for really nice photos that just focuses on their features and stuff like that. So that's one aspect of it. The ISO, that's more simply like how I like to think about it is like brightness or sensitivity to light. So that's something that you can bump up quite a bit, in a sense that if you're worried about getting a really dark photo, you can increase that. One thing to note, though, is that you kind of want to have it on the lowest possible that your camera can take, because the higher it goes, the more grain they have in the photo. So grain is like just these like pixelated things that you can see in your photo, which isn't great. So just making sure to know like what your camera can handle. So some of them can handle up to 1,000 ISO before getting even more grainy. Others can increase up to like 5,000 or even higher. I think phones do pretty well on that as well, especially the latest ones. And then with your shutter speed, just making sure that I like to use something like 1/1250 of a second. So you can imagine that's super quick. And that just for action shots. So if they're running around, that's usually a good one. Or if they, you know, the whole thing about how when they walk towards you, that's a good enough shutter speed to capture them moving at a slower pace, for example. If they're just standing there or sitting there, you can have them at like, you know, 1/200 or 1/500 of a second. So that's an example. And I guess that's just a rough, talk about just the settings that I use. I think early on, again, I went to a number of pet photographers and just asked them what kind of favorite settings they like. But I think a lot of it comes down to just, you know, just figuring it out by playing around with the settings yourself and just seeing what works for you. I think with any different situation or any different kind of photo or specific photo that you want to achieve, that's usually something like that. So I think, yeah, just play around with yourself. I'm more than happy for you to ask me further if you want to go through any more of that settings and stuff like that too.
Yeah, definitely. And what we might do is we might put some of those YouTube links in the show notes as well, so you guys can go and check that out, because I think for me personally, like, understanding that exposure triangle was a game changer. It's like, for example, like, if you open up your aperture more, you have the opportunity to have a shorter shutter speed because you've already got more light coming in and stuff like that. And but I think you're completely right. It really depends on your camera. It depends on the location. It depends about amount of light and what your cat's doing as well. So if your cat's sleeping, you've got a bit more leeway. But if they're like running around like crazy, you need to try and get as much light in as possible and have your shutter speed as low as possible as well. And like, I like what you mentioned about how this these settings are available in phones now. Like, you don't necessarily have to have this fancy, expensive camera. You can do so much with phones. Like, I was playing around. I'm going to get a name wrong, but one of the Google Pixel phones. And, like, it's just got it's like night vision, night sight setting is amazing. You can take a photo in pretty much darkness and you can see your cat there. Sitting there in the dark. It was kind of, it was actually kind of creepy, but like, that's awesome for people who go exploring at night, because a lot of cats do that because it's the time when there's least people around and stuff like that. Do you have any suggestions on how we can optimize the features on our phones to take photos of our cats?
You made a really good point, Hazel, and I think that, again, that's based on my experience. Like, my wife Charlotte, she has this pretty fancy phone as well. Like, it has a pretty good camera in there, and really high, like, megapixels and stuff, so it really takes like very clear photos. So I think we were out one day and we're trying to take a picture of Evan as he was exploring the great outdoors, and like, I was really struggling with like my settings and then turning things to suit that him moving so quickly, and she just took one quick photo and it was like tech shop, basically. So I was like, what? And so, yeah, really good point in the fact that a lot of these phone cameras, like, you're able to have those settings involved. And as the technology gets even better, that's, I guess that's the trend, because a lot of people are using their phones to take photos. That's what they have in their hand, what they have in their pocket and stuff like that. And a good saying is that the best camera that a person can have is the one in their hand or in their pocket and stuff. So that usually comes up to your phone. I guess just in terms of like setting wise, I'm not exactly too familiar with like phone settings, but as we said, like a lot of them you can set like the aperture, the ISO and the shutter speed and stuff. So that might actually be a really good thing to do before investing like in an expensive camera, is just playing around with those settings in your phone, just with the shutter speed and stuff like that too, which would be very good. Other things would be like the portrait mode. So if I'm not wrong, like some cameras have the portrait mode. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that the aperture is a very low number. So as I said earlier, just about blurring out the entire background and stuff. So that's where you get a lot of really nice like focus shots on your cat, for example. So that's something that, yeah, it's really important. Yeah,
that's awesome as well. And I think a lot of these phones now, like, for example, the other day I discovered that my phone had all these different settings that I didn't realize because it went through an update. And I think my recommendation to everyone is just play around with them and see what happens. Like, just take random photos of your cat. And in order to play around with the settings like your ISO or your aperture or your shutter speed, you usually need to go into the pro setting in your phone. So in my phone, I have a Samsung and it says pro. I'm not sure what the iPhone has, but it's usually you need to swipe across or something like that or check your menu. And there are also options in some phones where you can like set it up so that when you go on auto, it's using those settings too. So if you know that you're often indoors, you can change it so that that's the settings that's on auto, or when you, if you know that you're often outdoors, that's what you can play around with. But it's you don't have to have an expensive camera to take a nice photo anymore. Like it's the technology out there is absolutely incredible. Like my husband, so Daniel's very much into tech and phones and stuff, and he was showing me some of the stuff that people can do with phones, and it's beautiful photos. And like even just on that, there's something that I've read about recently is about like the Photoshop movement. So we all know about Photoshop being used to edit photos for magazines and like glamour magazines and things like that. But I've read that it's starting to spread to our cats. So what I mean by that is like people are using Photoshop to change the size of their cat's eyes or their ears or their tail. And one that I read about was they'd remove the belly flab so their cat didn't look as fat. I personally find the use of Photoshop on just people in that kind of aspect a bit icky. But now that it's moved on to cats and pets, that feels even worse to me. And it doesn't feel like it's the right use of Photoshop. Because I think our cats are beautiful just as they are, just as I think people are beautiful just the way they are. But I still also understand that you sometimes do need to use post-production to improve the lighting or something of our photographs in programs like Photoshop or Lightroom or something like that. How do you feel about that kind of movement? And is there a way that we can use those programs responsibly to fix our photos up?
No, that's amazing. Like, I think that, you know, when I first got quite serious into like photography and just recognizing that every photo that I saw out there or like that people, I guess professional photographers took, and just unpacking that, realizing that a lot of editing went into it, like post-production and stuff like that, made me feel at that time like a bit like really quite achy and like, oh yeah, we can just put a rainbow here and like, you know, just put some stars there and stuff like that. And, you know, there's no way to know, like in this digital age that we're in, like if you're looking at a photo, you know, whether they're actually, whether something actually happened the way it did, or was it just put in there to get more likes and stuff like that on Instagram? So it's a hard one. I think with my personal opinion, like I use these like post-production quite heavily, especially Lightroom. So Lightroom, just in terms of that is something that is able to like increase brightness, increase shadows, and you know, to the main things of just the basic settings and stuff, which is very, really quite important just in making a photo look a bit more in terms of color and saturation and stuff like that, which I think is good to use. In terms of Photoshop, that's slightly different. Like my personal opinion using that would be, I'm not really okay making like eyes bigger or, you know, removing like belly flap and stuff like that. I don't really use that for that. But the main thing that I use Photoshop for is to remove like dogs and cats leashes. So I think that safety is the most important with all my photo shoots. And so I have them having leashes most of the time, especially dogs or cats that are not okay being without them. And well, cats, you definitely need leashes on. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I think like I try to remove them just to be able to show like a really nice like focus just on the cat and the landscape and stuff like that. So that's a lot of pet photographers, like professional pet photographers, do that for that purpose. Others, I know, probably wouldn't use that for the same things in terms of making their eyes look bigger and stuff. So I think it really comes down though to what makes I guess the person comfortable. I know that, you know, like just recognizing that a lot of these photos or all of these photos are for our viewing pleasure. So just for us to look at it and be comfortable and happy with them. I mean, the biggest advice would be, yeah, like have something where, you know, when you look at it, you remember what was going on with your cat that made you laugh or made you happy and stuff like that. Not the first focus being like, oh no, I think I made like the eyes look bigger, and that's something that I focus on, and be like, oh, actually my cat's eyes are not that big, for example. So I think, again, just making yourself comfortable with that photo, but using Photoshop and Lightroom to, I guess, remove any distractions and all that would be where I would use it for mainly. Yeah,
that makes sense. And so am I correct in understanding that Lightroom is good for things like adjusting brightness or adjusting the colors so that, like, for example, either green looks – because sometimes when you take a photo, the green doesn't look like what the green looked like when you were there on the day. Yeah. So, like, you can use Lightroom for that kind of thing. Or, like, something I sometimes use it for is because our cats might be in the dark, in a shadow, so I might try and brighten that up a little bit. And whereas Photoshop is for like more editing the photo, like removing leashes or a dog in the background. Or once I used it to remove a cup that looked really bad in a photo. So, but like, so that's kind of how you use it.
Yeah, exactly. So like Lightroom's more of the basic like workflow that all my photos will go into. And Lightroom is also a really good software to be able to like rank your photos. So right from the beginning, when my photos come into my computer, they go straight to Lightroom, and I sort it out using that program. Other things I would do is flag them. So I'll basically go through a process of picking which photos I say yes to, and those that I'm like, oh, it's blur, no. So reject them quickly. And then after that, I go to this star rating process. So like 1 to 5. So for example, like you start off with like 3 stars, for example, that's something that works for you, and then go up to like 5 stars. So it's a lot about culling photos, so removing the ones that you're not too happy with, instead of being stuck with like tens of thousands of photos just from that one session. So yeah, that's something that I use Lightroom for, and then basically increasing shadows and getting rid of shadows and stuff like that. It's pretty important. So I guess on that note, taking underexposed photos are better than taking overexposed photos. So if it's too bright, it's very hard to correct the lighting in post-production. But if you do like a slightly underexposed photo, you can just in Lightroom or any other like editing software, just increasing like the brightness and exposure mainly, and increasing the shadows, removing the shadows basically. Yeah,
that does make sense. And so Photoshop and Lightroom, I believe there are phone apps for them now as well, but they're mainly used on the computer. But there are options of apps that you can use on your phone as well. Like two of my favorites is VS Code and Snapseed. I find them quite useful. Do you have any favorites?
I think I've definitely heard of those two. And then I do know that that's Lightroom on there too. So I think I would say Lightroom, but I don't often edit a lot on my phone.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that I think that's just those are options for people who just want to do it on the go. You don't have as much flexibility as you do with the computer programs like Lightroom and Photoshop, but I find them useful occasionally when I just want to do a quick edit. So like just like brightening up a photo or things like that that I haven't noticed beforehand. Yeah. But like talking about brightening up photos and have focusing more on taking underexposed photos, what kind of things should we look into when we're taking a photograph of our cat, like particularly looking at the scene or the background and stuff like that?
Yeah, so really about making sure that there's no like crazy distractions in the background. So I took a photo of this like family once with a horse, and I was really happy with the photo, only to realize that there was like a garbage, a bin in the background that I really struggled to use Photoshop to remove. Like, it was so hard. So like, I spent quite a lot of time doing that. But yeah, I think it's making your life a lot easier by making sure, like, even if you just turn in a certain way and just angle your phone or camera in a certain way, just avoiding the avoiding that would have saved a lot of time and effort, basically. So I think making sure that you don't have that many distractions in the back. So as I said, like with a lot of the photos that I take, and I think a lot of pet photographers do, would be just making the focus on your pet, your animal. So yeah, just making sure that there's no harsh lighting. So if you take a shot of the sun behind you that's really high, you get a silhouette as well, for example. So just avoiding that. And I think that's something that you can see quite easily when you take a photo on your phone, just the instantaneous, like what it will look like, is pretty important. But as I said, I think the distractions thing is the most important, making sure that there's no like really like red or, you know, very colorful subjects in the background that you don't want as well. That usually becomes where the audience turns their eyes towards focusing on as well, instead of the subject, which is your adorable cat.
Yeah.
But that'll be the main thing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think like also the color, like something I've picked up is the color contrast, because there's some beautiful photos of black cats online on Instagram and stuff where they're actually in grass. And I find that they really pop in grass. And I've found that like Lumos tends to pop in trees, like when he's in a tree, because he's white and then the tree's brown. So like, it's just, I think maybe a bit of a contrast as well, maybe just so that kind of helps your cat stand out a little bit. But then of course you can't always be like, oh, I'm out and about, I want to take a photo of my cat, but my cat's like blended in with this background. You can always still work around that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a superb point, like just the color contrast and thinking about the tones that match and what's pleasing and stuff like that. It's very, very important, like you said. So like black cats on like, for example, like green and grass and like white and all that is pretty good too. So yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Something that I've been learning with Lumos and Noxy are very white cats, so I find that they tend to get overexposed while the rest of the background is underexposed. So that's something that I'm learning with playing around with settings and stuff. So I think it's always just something that you just learn with time as well, like we mentioned before. So like I did a bit of googling in preparation for today, and I wrote what I googled was how to improve your photography with your cat, and one thing that popped up a lot was about composition. What does composition mean in photography, and like, do you have any favorite composition rules that you use?
I'll let you in on a secret, Hasara. Like, I had to google it too. So like the answer, like, yeah, I guess composition, and this is a working definition, is basically like how objects are placed in a work of art. So I guess when it comes to photography, it's being able to arrange those certain like different elements and stuff like that, to make sure that the goal of your work, as they call it, would be the best. So this definitely differs when it comes to like landscape photos. Like, what do you want to achieve in that picture, for example, that you take? So you want, like, in a landscape, everything to be tack sharp. So basically all the settings that I set, throw it out of the window, for example. And when it comes to like pets, like the composition that I like in a sense to do would be, as I said, focusing a lot on the animal itself and blur everything else out. Obviously this changes when you want to see them interacting with the environment and stuff like that. So yeah.
That's really interesting. One thing that I've learned with my photography, like the photos I take, is because, like we were talking about before, you have to be really quick because our cats move around really quickly. So I find that, like, for example, if we're on a beach, the horizon's always really crooked. So that's, I'm a bit OCD, so I always try and straighten that out in Lightroom. I get really distracted by that. And when I'm not photographing cats, I like photographing figurines and stuff. I always use the rule of, I think it's rule of one third. So you kind of break up your screen into the thirds on both ways and place your focus point in the third. But I find that that's not the best for Instagram, because when Instagram just chops off, it just shows you the square. So it doesn't really look that great. So I don't really use it for that anymore. But for other photos, I do use that. But those are my favorite composition rules anyway.
No, that's good. I think you did ask the question about like favorite views, and that the rule of thirds is actually it's my favorite that I use a lot in my photography. But yeah, I do know what you mean. I kind of like laughed at just regards to the fact that Instagram makes you do like a square photo, for example, and that a lot of my photos end up being in the center, like the animal, and I'm just like, no, it's gone, like the rule of thirds. But I know one of the biggest rules, like if you search something like composition rules, like one of the biggest rules is that there are no rules. Like, you can break any of them at any point, whatever makes you feel comfortable. I think the rule of thirds is just a lot of, I guess, people's perception. Like, when they look at a photo, they tend to focus on that third point. So if you draw like two horizontal and two vertical lines down any photo, where the intersections are, that's usually where people focus initially and the most. So having like your animal in those intersections tend to make for a more pleasing picture. If that's something that people want to do too.
And like talking about like a pleasing picture, I suppose, like when we're walking around with our pets, we see them from our eye level, so we're always a lot taller than them. Even when you're as short as me. But we have this tendency to take photos while we're standing up and looking down at them and stuff. But I've read that it might be better to take a photo from their eye level, so seeing it from their perspective. Can you explain what that actually means and how we could go about doing that?
Yeah. I don't think I'm a lot taller than you, Hasara. But, yeah, I think that this is probably one of the most important techniques to use in pet photography. It's probably one of the big things that for anyone starting out and taking better photos of their pet, this is one, in a sense, simple thing that they can adopt and do that would tremendously increase their photos, like quality, how pleasing it is and stuff like that. It's just really getting on that aspect of being on eye level with them, I think, is the whole thing about wanting to see what they see from their perspective and just being down low. So there is such a stark contrast being taking from the top and taking from their eye level, for example. So I think, no other way than to say like, you need to be comfortable being prone on the ground next to dog poop or stuff like that. And I did that a lot. And mindful, just watch where you're proning or like, you know, where you're lying down on. It's a lot about getting on your knees and stuff like that too, and just being willing to get gross and dirty as well. So because those pictures really do make for a lot better in terms of the way they turn out. And I guess another thing on that note is, like, for me, thinking if they don't go low, then you have to go high. If it's either you go low to be on the same level as them, or they have to go higher up. So for cats, that's why I like to have them on, like, if they're comfortable, having our fellow cat explorers on trees would make for really nice photos, for example, just being up on that eye level with them. Or I know that we took like the center photo shoot, for example, what we made sure of was that we had like a, in a sense, a stage or a bench so that everyone's higher up. So I didn't really have to be prone on the ground. So I was very thankful for that. But yeah, I think a lot of pet photographers joke about, or photographers joke about having like knee pads under their jeans, for example. Like, I used to laugh at that so much, like initially, but after like a 3-hour photo shoot, for example, I'm just like, my like knees were all like scarred and stuff like that. I'm just like, yeah, you know, maybe you should invest in some knee pads. But yeah.
One of my favorite tricks to do is to actually take the camera off my neck, and I just kind of hold it just hovering above the ground. It's taken me some time to do that on level. So like sometimes my photos are really crooked.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think it's a bit of an art to it, especially like with your phone and being able to press the button while getting really low and stuff like that too, or like having the phone really low. But I guess that's in a sense the beauty of like post-production, where you can, you know, crop things out, or you can make them level and stuff like that. So yeah,
definitely. And I found I'm not sure about whether this is the case with a lot of phones, but I find that my phone, I can actually take photos with buttons on the edges, so perhaps like other phones can do that. And I've also found a good trick with my phone is that I actually flip it upside down so that the camera is actually on the bottom, like closer to the ground, so that makes it a bit easier as well. But those are just tricks that I like to play around with when I use my phone.
That's awesome. That's really good.
Yeah. And I find the phone is a lot easier if you want to take a close photo. So sometimes Lumos will be sleeping and I'll get right in his face. He probably doesn't appreciate it, but it's better than having the big camera in his face.
He'll look at me.
Yeah. And I'm guessing a lot of people, well, I hope a lot of people are like me, because I think I drive Daniel a bit crazy with this, because my phone is just full of photos and videos of Lumos and Noxie, and then we've got like 4 or 5 external hard drives that are just full of cat photos, not just of Lumos and Noxie, but of my old cat as well. And over time, I haven't always been the best with how I manage my workflow with my photos and things like that. Do you have any suggestions on how to manage our photography and video files so they don't like crash our clouds or our devices or our hard drives, which is all of which has happened to me?
It's funny because this definitely strikes a chord with me, like having really experienced, just like, this was before I actually got off with the, in terms of the pet photography business, but just my, like, taking a lot of photos of my cats when they're growing up, like Chai and Thyme, and then only to find that a few months later, like, one of my external drives with all the photos just crashed and couldn't be recovered. Like, that was really quite, it was really difficult. And then, you know, I went on to buy another cheap external hard drive thinking that I could, replace that. And I took pictures of Evan, like, our latest edition, and that one crashed as well. So there goes his baby photos. So it's very important to just know that, you know, again along the whole lines of like, don't trust your tech to that extent. But I definitely do know what you mean about having a lot of photos in your phone and driving our significant others like really crazy and stuff. So a good rule that I've been researching and learning about is called this 3-2-1 rule. And that just means, I know it's going to sound really like OCD, but the 3 comes from having 3 different backup files. So you need to have a total of 3 files of all your photos, which you can imagine is pretty crazy. And then 2 means having them in 2 separate storage drives. So either external drives, your phone or your laptop and stuff like that. So 2 different places. And the 1 stands for having it off-site. So it means either in cloud or it means to have an external hard drive like somewhere other than your house. And I think this is more for if you have any like fire or like natural disasters and stuff, and your house kind of goes. And I think that's Yeah, that's quite important to a lot of people, especially overseas and stuff like that. So that's important, having one offsite. I think just my take on this is, yeah, it's going to be hard if you have many different external hard drives. I've tried to keep it to the minimum, meaning that I've gotten like bigger hard drives. So now I think just in terms of technology becoming better, like there's all these like different like thunderbolts and speeds and stuff like that that you can get for your hard drives, but just to make this transfer quicker. But for me, I just go with the cheaper ones. I obviously learned my lesson here, but like cheaper ones with bigger storage. So I've spent on an 8 terabyte about $200, which is pretty good. And the only downside is it takes forever to transfer. But even by then, it's like 3 hours to transfer, you know, like 2 terabytes of stuff over. It's pretty good. And I just leave like the computer on when I'm out and stuff like that and come back to switch that off. So it's really good if you're not too worried about getting those photos backed up instantaneously, which I don't. But yeah, I think the main takeaway is just backing up your stuff. That's important. And a lot of post-production stuff like Lightroom and yeah, it's just about having to sort things out really well. So just having them in different folders and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people have different thoughts about this because some people, like myself, are afraid of deleting like photos that aren't very good. But yeah, I think at some point of time you need to do that just to clear some space. If not, there are all these different like hard drives that are going for cheaper as well. So the main takeaway with the external hard drives that I've lost is that I've thought them to be, they are portable, but I've carried them around. I haven't dropped them or anything, but I can only imagine that it's like when I place my bag down and they've got some internal damage apparently. One note is that recovering them probably costs the same price as like 5 of those external hard drives. So you're always better off buying more storage at cheaper than risk losing all those photos, I would say. A lot of cloud, I guess, storage is really good as well. So Dropbox is a good one, but I think you have to pay like membership, like monthly fees. Again, I guess that goes a long way. And, you know, just being able to transfer your files there just for more storage, like paying more to get more storage is, yeah, pretty important. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like that, all of what you've just said just really hit me. So I lost a hard drive which had, so Tabby's my old cat who I had for 23 years. So it had all her photos. It had all the photos from my late father as well.
Oh, no.
And like we just lost this hard drive and we were really devastated. And
yeah.
And it was a terabyte hard drive, so it had a lot of stuff on it. So then we actually paid for it to get retrieved. So we got most of the things back, which was amazing. Like we didn't get everything, but we got most of it back. But that was really expensive. You're right. It cost like 5 hard drives worth.
Yeah.
And that 3-2-1, that rule, that idea is such a great idea. And I think we all think, oh yeah, we wouldn't have a natural disaster happening in our home. Mm. But it's December in 2018 in Sydney, and we just recently had some crazy storms to the point that my husband's head office's car park and basement was completely flooded, and they lost a whole heap of storage and also like cars and things like that. And you'd think that would never happen, but it did.
Yeah.
So those things really do happen. It sounds crazy when you think about it, but it's a good way to think about how to store those photos and video files that actually end up being quite precious after a while. So
yeah,
that's exactly. Pretty awesome. I really like that idea. And so we're coming towards the end of our podcast, and we've got this fast 4 questions that we ask everyone that comes on the show. So the first one is, what do you hope to see in the future regarding the movement of cats who explore with their humans?
Yeah, I really want to be able to see it get a lot better. I want more people to, I guess, be more aware that taking their cats out is okay and actually really good to do. So I firmly believe in being safe while giving, you know, like cats the space to go out. And that's where a lot of what you guys are talking about, Sarah, about like the cat explorers and giving your cats the world. I think that's very, very key and very important in doing it in a safe way, because, you know, there are dogs and all these different things out there, and, you know, they we just want them to be safe, but have time to explore and see things out there as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we have this opportunity to give our cats the world, and this is one way we can do it if they're open to doing it that way. I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
What's been the most entertaining comment that someone has said to you while you've been out and about with your kitties?
Well, I've definitely got a lot of those, like, oh, wow, is that a cat? Or, like, you know, those sort of comments where you start to think, like, have they ever seen a cat? But I guess maybe not outdoors and definitely not on a leash. So I give them that. But one of it was when we were in the lift and, like, Charlotte and I, we had Evan in our backpack. And I think a lady just came up to us and, yeah, she saw that it was a cat. And then she was, like, thinking to herself or voicing out loud, like, okay, like, what kind of cat would it be? Like, is it a Bengal? Is it, like, a ragdoll or something, like, quite unusual? And then she kind of just gave this comment, oh, it's just a normal cat, like, because Evan's a domestic short hair. So she kind of said that. Well, she said it in Mandarin and, like, it sounds funny in Chinese, in a sense. And we're just like, okay, no, he's actually really, really special to us. So we're kind of offended. I mean, that's yeah, but we had a bit of a laugh about that, I guess. Yeah.
So she might have not known that you were understanding everything she was saying as well.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting, like, that people say, oh, is that a cat? But I think everyone gets, like, because it's not something that's seen that often, they get a bit shocked and they're like, they start saying out loud what the thoughts that are going through their head. So he's like, that's not a dog. That's a cat. It's on a leash. It's outside. And it just sounds funny to us because we're like, yeah, it's a cat. It's outside. It's on a leash. Yeah. This is something we do all the time.
Yeah, being the brain work. That's quite funny as well.
Actually, we went to Bunnings, which is a hardware store in Australia, last weekend, and we had Lumos and Noxie in the trolley. We were just taking them out, and then this lady was on the phone, and she was like, I could just see her whisper. She's like, oh, my God, I have to tell you, there's a cat in a trolley in Bunnings.
That's awesome.
It's quite funny.
Yeah, oh, cool.
Yeah, I love hearing the comments that people hear while they're out and about.
Yeah, it definitely makes us stand out. And I think that, like, we are people that, you know, like to, you know, just fade into the background and, like, not be so, like, out there and be seen and stuff like that. So I think taking our cats out is quite challenging at times. I think, as we said, you know, just with regards to people thinking or noticing us a bit more and stuff like that. And I think that, you know, just with regards to, I guess, the future, and I think with the community of you guys, like, you guys growing and supporting all that as well, is so important, because then I guess it's not just in terms of the community, like cat explorer community, but also educating people who are not having cats that go outdoors to just understand that it's okay and that there's no stigma or anything negative associated with bringing your cats out, and we're not crazy doing that. Yeah
definitely. And the whole education piece of this is how we do it, it's actually safe, mm-hmm. and we're very careful with how we do it, and understanding what other people can do to support us that way. So, like, not have an off-leash dog run up to you while you're holding your cat, or things like that. Yeah definitely agree with you. So who are your favorite accounts to follow on Instagram and why? And they don't have to be Cat Explorer related.
Okay, cool. Because I was actually going to really say you guys.
Thank you.
And the adventures of, Mr. Noxie as well. Like, it's very entertaining being able to see all of that. And, you know, just especially, like, reading the comments of, like, what people are sharing just with the things that you are as well. And, you know, just reading people's struggles, and, you know, just makes us feel like we know that we're part of that community too, and just recognizing that people feel the same way, and that's okay, and doesn't mean that it's enough for us to, like, just give up and not do it just because I guess it's difficult. Another account that I like would be Tomon Hajime. Mm-hmm. So that's we've done a lot of photos for her and Yubi and her other cats, and it's been amazing, and they're just such adorable and gorgeous cats, and we've become quite good friends with the owner as well, and she's lovely too.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They came along to the Cat Explorer picnic, so we were really lucky to meet them. And I'm sorry, everyone, you can hear Lumos meowing in the background. He wants some attention. So what product, service, or program has been a game changer for you with your kitties?
Really thinking hard about this one. I think in terms of products, like, we tend to buy a whole host of different things. Early on, we got this Nobo feeder. And what that is exactly what it describes. And that's just like different. So you buy it for about 100 USD. And it is basically like 10 mice. And you can fill them with like dry food mainly, like biscuits. And you just hide them around the house. And that was really good for us because it encouraged them to, like, our cats to hunt in a sense and, you know, do things that are enriching, because being indoors all the time, that can be fairly not very stimulating. So that was really good. They still continue to have a lot of fun with that. We just find it actually a bit challenging for us, like, having to find the mice after this, like, because they don't leave it in the same place. They manage to, like, hide it themselves, so they are playing hide and seek with us, which is great. The cat it products have been quite good. So we've, like, Dime, like, loves to drink water from, like, fresh water from the tap, so we've got the cat it water fountain that we thought would work quite well, which it does, but she still likes to go to the tap. So yeah, in fact, Evan likes to use this water fountain a lot more. And I think just with program again, you guys, I'm not trying to be biased here, but you guys
Thank
are great.
You.
And yeah, I think it came down to, you know, like, we are still looking for, like, a really nice, like, cat backpack for them, for Evan mainly. What we didn't do was to ask you first, so we went to, like, eBay and got, like, this the cheapest one and something that looks like what you guys are using, and we got it only to find that it's smaller than Evan even after we measured everything, so we had to return it and stuff like that. So afterwards, going on to your blog on just the backpacks and your reviews on every one of them, and based on the community and what they said, like, yeah, we really found it very helpful in terms of figuring out what we want. So we might end up with one of them. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so glad that was helpful. But the backpacks situation, like, if it makes you feel better, we bought two. We're really excited about it. We measured it out. We thought we had it right. We checked the weight. We checked, tried to check our cat's height, which is a bit hard as well because they don't really let you measure them. And yeah, Lumos was too big for the one that we initially got. So we had to get a bigger one. I think that's quite common, which surprised me, because you don't, like, dogs are big, you expect that from a dog, but you don't really expect that from a cat, and to find that a lot of backpacks are too small. Like, so many of the cats in our community are outgrowing their backpacks, which is a challenge that I never really envisioned. Mm-hmm. And now going through it, I'm like, oh well, yeah, that's something we need to keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely. I think that is a big point, because I mean, a lot of cats are getting better being outdoors, and I think a lot of the cat explorer community, like, they have a lot of cats that are comfortable doing that, but, like, for those that aren't, you know, a backpack is where they spend most of the time, even being outdoors, so that's something that they need to have space, but also privacy from people being like, is that a cat, sort of people are trying to reach in and stuff like that. So I think it's a very big area that needs a lot of improvement, I would say.
Definitely. It's It definitely is. You just gave me, like, maybe one day we can have a cat backpack that expands as your cat grows. That would be cool. I don't know how they do that. So thank you so much for joining us, Keith. It's been amazing. Like, we've learned so much about photography, about different techniques that we can take, and tech, and I've learned so much on my own, so I'm sure that our community will really appreciate you taking the time to help us all out. Where can we follow you and Furry Munchkin's pet photography online?
You can find me on Instagram, so it's Furry Munchkin's Photography, because there wasn't enough space to put pet photography in there. So that's where you can find me mainly. And Facebook is just Furry Munchkin's Pet Photography, all spaces, and my website will be furrymunchkins.com.au. And that's, yeah, I'll reply to you guys very quickly. But yeah, thanks so much for having me. Like, it was a real treat being able to talk to you, Hasara, and just, you know, think, like, trying to answer some of the questions that the community has. And I think it's such an awesome community, and just seeing all these people who really love their cats and wanting to give their cats the world and the best by being outside in a safe way. I think that's so important. So yeah, looking forward to see huge and really big things that you guys are coming up with.
Oh, thank you. That's such a lovely, lovely thing to say. I really appreciate it. And what we'll do is we'll put all those links to your social media and your website on in our show notes, as well as any other links that we talked about today. So those YouTube videos and stuff like that. And the show notes will be available at www.catexplorer.co/podcast. And thank you so much for listening today. It would really mean the world to us if you could hit subscribe on to the Cat Explorer podcast on wherever you listen to this podcast. And it'll help us continue to get some awesome guests on the show who'll be able to keep inspiring you and give you some awesome advice on exploring with your kitties. And we would also love to hear your thoughts on today's episode. So feel free to screenshot this episode on your phone, post it to your Instagram stories, and tag us at catexplorer.community and at Furry Munchkins Photography, and let us know what your main takeaways are and what you think of the episode. And if you're on Twitter, feel free to tweet your thoughts to us at Cat Explorers. And as always, thank you so much for being a part of the Cat Explorer community. We're so grateful for each and every one of you. And that's it for today. So we'll catch you next time. And in the meantime, enjoy giving your kitty the world.